Okay, recording is in progress. Hi, I'm Siobhan Sarna, founder of SIBO SOS. And remember, the SOS has come to mean save ourselves. Always work with a practitioner who knows what they're doing. And I'm here with, speaking of practitioner, who knows what he's doing, Steve Wright. Steve, how you doing today?
I'm doing great. I'm excited. It's Monday. I'm full of energy. Let's do this.
Cool. Let's do it. Okay, cool. Me too. So what we're going to talk about today is how to address these bloating and underlying issues of bloating. And there's distension, that's also sort of the medical term for it. But what I want to do is have Steve take us through his approach. And if you don't know who Steve is, he's somebody who I've trusted for so long, thank goodness, that I've known you for this long. Steve helped me when I told him I had a dream about sharing information that I had learned about SIBO. He was in the phase of his career where he was training people like me. And so he was there before the first SIBO SOS Summit in 2017 and the second SIBO SOS Summit in 2017. And Steve has an incredible history of educating people about gut health. His website and his platform was SCD Lifestyle, Specific Carbohydrate Diet Lifestyle, but then it got into leaky gut and on and on, and then they trained practitioners. Now, the other thing about Steve, he has his own personal story, and also he never wanted to develop his own supplements. He has done that because he couldn't find what he wanted in the marketplace. And I know a lot of you have used them. So I love hearing what's so different about what Steve does. Okay, thank you all for letting me know where you're from. And it's so good to have you here. Steve, oh, by the way, Steve's an engineer by training. Yeah, I know. Like, see how this all works out? All right, Steve Wright, take it over. What are you thinking about for bloating these days?
Well, bloating, I mean, let's just start at the highest level and maybe either help some people normalize their experiences or understand their experiences, because I think there's maybe some confusion. Like, for instance, you're not supposed to have any gas. Like, there's like an ideal out there. Like, I don't ever want to make gas. And that's actually not healthy. They've done a lot of research on this, and like a normal healthy human will still fart like five to 14 times a day. And so this idea that like you should never make gas or no gas is just number one, not something you want to shoot for. That's not actually healthy. And number two, it's a fantasy. And so let's start there. And then let's be really real that, you know, I used to have bloating and visceral hypersensitivity so bad that it didn't matter if I ate a burger or if I had chicken and lettuce, I would basically like swell up, my body would descend, my stomach area. And then I would basically cry because it was so painful. Back then I wasn't aware of my emotions and I wasn't integrated enough as a man. So I would just say like my eyes were leaking, but I was definitely crying and I didn't really have any options. And so if you're someone right now who does have visceral hypersensitivity, which we'll go into in a minute, and you're someone who's bloats up and you have to like undo your pants or something, like, trust me, I have been there. I don't know your exact version of it, but I have my own story that was, you know, essentially almost got me fired. So bloating is like a day stopper, you know, when it happens, at least for me anyways, if it happens, I can't think about anything else. Like, I just want it to go away. And so I think when it comes to bloating, number one is, how do we get to where you have hope that this can go away? And number two, you can make it go away yourself. And then number three, you can focus on why is it happening in the first place? Because there's all this talk about root causes and potentially even SIBO being your root cause. But if you're dealing with the day-to-day pain of bloating or visceral hypersensitivity, and you don't feel like you have any control over it, it can be so hard to, you know, just press forward with even focusing on SIBO.
And of course, SIBO is caused by something else. So it's this whole cascade. And it's really a feeling of being out of control. That's the way I experienced it, of this, like, something is going on. It'd be like if someone was breaking into my house and I knew they were there, but I didn't know how to like call the police or something. That's a scary thought. So that's the way I felt about it. I'm sure, can you all relate? Just pop in the chat if you can relate to that. So we're talking about the problem, and also we're going to define what visceral hypersensitivity is, because there is that's a medical term, and you may have it and not even know it, because it's very rare that like a doctor's going to you know, diagnose you with that. But let's talk about point number one, as promised, how to manage bloating before it starts. Is it possible, Steve?
Yeah. I think it is. It's a combination of dietary changes and supplements. Like that's, you know, and you could say like, I'm biased because I'm coming from a supplement company, and sure I am biased, but I've also dealt with this with myself and like hundreds of other people for over 10 years. So the only way to go through this in the short term is dietary changes and supplemental changes to help you manage that. But I do believe, and what I've seen is that if you can use those changes to get out of pain, you will feel empowered to take the next step, which is to figure out what's going on. And so I want to deliver hope today. I want to deliver practical applications that people can use today. And we're going to dive deeper into that.
So we're talking about digestive enzymes and some other products and just some other supplements that you may already have at home. So before we get into that, what's the difference between distension and bloating?
Yeah. So, I mean, some people's body cavities will distend out after they eat or due to some normal fermentation after a meal. It's when it gets like painful, or again, your clothes stop fitting, or you have, other uncontrollable issues, whether that be related pain or like tachycardia or something like that, that it becomes a real issue. And so again, the goal is not to like have a body that like never ferments something. That's not right. Like the microbiome is supposed to ferment things. You have bugs everywhere in your skin. So there is going to be a little bit of a movement in your body, in your cavity after you eat it, a little distension. The bloating is when it becomes like a painful for your life, you know, something. Right. So that's the biggest thing. And then that rolls us into visceral hypersensitivity, which is basically 30 to 60%. The research is really unclear at this point. That's just the range of research studies that I've found of people with IBS or bloating report pain from that distension or that movement of the cavity out, usually the small intestine. And that's called visceral hypersensitivity. So if you're on this call, you know, you already have a higher chance of being like higher than probably the 30%. So I would wager to say like at least probably 50% of people on this call right now, just due to selection bias, probably have some version of visceral hypersensitivity. At the extreme end, that feels, at least for me, that felt like knives in my gut. Like I would have days where I was a non-functioning human. I would go crawl into bed and I would think about death even because it was so painful. Like, I wonder if it's better, if that's the only way to get rid of this. On the mild end, it's, you know, it's just really annoying and you think about it all day. So visceral hypersensitivity is very real. It is very connected to your gut as well as your brain. And as someone who suffered with it for many years and now, I mean, maybe it happens once a year. I really don't believe I really am affected by it. I can get bloated, but I don't have the pain anymore. And so there is hope. You can get rid of it. I believe, not everybody, of course, and not medical advice, but I think there is a path.
Okay, so let's talk about so we're 9 minutes in, we've talked about the problem. I want to get into the solutions because that's what everybody's here for. So when I just want to throw out a couple of things that when we're talking about how to manage the bloat before it starts, Dr. Pimentel tells this story about how he had a patient and he went out to lunch with this patient and they couldn't figure out why he was so bloated beforehand. But after eating this meal with him, he understood why this gentleman was so bloated because he ate with his mouth open and so much air was coming in while he was talking and chewing and all of that. So that is something that I don't think we talk enough about. That is a possibility for you, for any of us. So just keep that in mind, that that's one thing that was, you know, an unexpected source of bloating. Then, yeah. You know, right? So remember that diet manages your symptoms in this overgrowth scenario. And we're all looking at, you know, SCD, GAPS, SIBO specific food guide from Dr. Allison Seebecker, Dr. Pimentel's low fermentation diet. We're all looking to lower the fermentable load. That's that low FODMAP, right? We're trying to lower the fermentable load. One of the ways that I do it is by using Holozymes. You may have digestive enzymes at home that you just been like, ugh, it's not a prescription. It's not going to help me. Talk to us about digestive enzymes, if you would, because that I believe is easy. Obviously, it's you know, it's common. And I think sometimes we overlook it, Steve, because it seems like too easy.
Yeah, well, let's circle back to some other root causes after we talk about enzymes. Okay. Because they're, you know, there are these underlying assumptions like gulping air. Some people who are athletes might recognize that they have gas after an athletic performance because they're doing the same thing. So,
Interesting.
There is some really cool, just individual things you can notice and journal about. And one of those things, quite frankly, is enzymes. I mean, your gut, think of your sort of like the process in your gut, sort of like the TSA going into the airport. There are so many ways to detect bad things and keep them out of your body. So, you know, the TSA has screeners and dogs and I don't know, machines that check us and people that pat us down, all kinds of layers of security. And your gut has a lot of things like that as well. And one of the things that your gut is just unwilling to do is accept foods that are not broken down to the right size of molecule. Like it's like go, no go. There's no gray zone here. If it's not the right size molecule, the gut, it won't go across the gut wall. And then if it doesn't go across the gut wall, that means that the bacteria or the fungi or whatever get to have a party with it. They get to eat their birthday cake and make a bunch of gas. And so what do enzymes do? Enzymes cut the molecules, especially the carbohydrates, which are the most fermentable, down to the right sizes so you can absorb them right away and not have that higher fermentation potential. So there's this hyper focus right now on, like you said, you mentioned like 5 or 6 diets already on this one talk, and we're like, what, 12 minutes in or something.
Yeah, right.
So if diets were the only answer, we would have already found it. We don't need another classification of how much fermentation there is. That's, in my opinion, as an engineer and as math and first principles based, that's a law of diminishing returns. If you're already on one of these diets, the Pimentel diet, the Seebecker diet, low FODMAPs, SED, anything like that, that's like a super advanced diet. Like you're already at the bleeding edge of lowering your fermentation potential. And if it's not working, then you have to make a change if you want it to go away. And I think enzymes would be the first place to go, because the fundamental fact is that bloating is extra gas. Extra gas only comes from bugs eating food that you should have eaten or absorbed, basically. And so enzymes can be really lacking due to all kinds of things. It could be your age. It could be your nervous system being too stressed. It could be that your stomach acid is off. You could have inflammation at the, you know, if you're a celiac or your non-gluten sensitivity and you have damage at the villi level in the small intestine, you're not going to have brush border enzymes. And so you have almost an infinite number of ways to reduce your enzyme potential. And then you also have pancreatic enzymes, brush border enzymes, and microbiome enzymes. And so depending on what level you may have, like maybe your pancreatic enzymes are good, but your microbiome is messed up due to antibiotic usage in the past, you're going to struggle even if you're eating the lowest fermentation potential diet out there. And so just helping your body out is a really good idea, and using a product that's going to cover all three of those areas is the answer. And if you want to know why diets tend to work, it's because they're all of these diets are essentially compensating for the fact that you can't break down these different types of carbohydrates that a normal healthy human can't. FODMAPs are not toxic. They're not literally there. They don't cause cancer. They're not going to destroy your brain. They're not even in, like, if gluten is like the enemy, if you consider gluten and seed oils the worst, FODMAPs are so benign compared to them. And so that means a healthy gut, any healthy human gut should be able to break those down. And so if it's not happening, that's a clue that the underlying mechanical nature of your body is not working properly. The number one link there is enzymes, because all of those FODMAPs start off as these giant complex carbohydrate, not all of them, except for the sugar alcohols and polyols, but all the other ones that we eat most of. And we have to cut those, links up. And that's what happens at the pancreatic enzyme level, the brush border enzyme level, and then the microbiome level. And if you get that right, you know, FODMAPs don't have to be an issue for you. Again, they're not toxic. Sorbitol is not the enemy.
No, it's so true. And we can definitely get into that mindset of we're like food bad. And I'm bad because I ate food. I don't want anyone to experience that. I certainly have felt that before. So there's starch bloat or sugar bloat or veggie bloat. And I think that ties in. And then we've got a couple of questions. So what is the difference? And also, can you do me a favor and remind me, because I always forget about like the names of the enzymes, protease, lipase, and what they do. I mean, I remember and then I forget.
Yeah. So we'll do them in tandem. Let's do them in tandem. Okay. So polysaccharide is a complex carbohydrate. This is everything from your vegetables to your grains to starches. They all contain polysaccharides. Poly just means many bonds. So polysaccharide just means many bonds of carbohydrates or many bonds of sugars, actually. So amylase is a pancreatic enzyme. Someone mentioned Creon. I just saw it pop up in the chat. Creon is a prescription pancreatic insufficiency drug that contains only pancreatic enzymes. So it contains a lot of amylase. The other two pancreatic enzymes are protease for protein and lipase for fat. So amylase is like the workhorse for polysaccharides. And again, this is any vegetable you eat. This is, all your starches, 100% of your starches, all of your grains. Amylase has to go in there and do a lot of work. And it begins to cleave the structures down. So they're smaller and smaller and smaller, such that then you can go to your brush border. And again, amylase drops in right at the bottom of the stomach and the small intestine, right where it transitions. And then your brush border is a little bit farther down. So the hope is that you cut it down a little bit. And then now at your brush border, you release enzymes that are really important for sugar bloat. And so those are things like maltase, lactase, which is the sugar in milk that a lot of people have a problem with, invertase. And so this helps break down, for instance, like sucrose. Sucrose is not necessarily bad. It's found in all the fruits, almost in nature. But it's two sugars bonded. And we have to break that bond so we can absorb them. And so a lot of the diets, like the specific carbohydrate diet, why does it work? Well, it eliminates the majority, like 99% of all those polysaccharides. So if you have an amylase issue, you're much better off. And then it eliminates most of the brush border sucrose issues. So then it's mostly just fructose and glucose, and you can just absorb it. And that is why that diet, I believe, works so effectively for many individuals. The other diets are a similar version of that. After that, you have your microbiome enzymes. And this is where the FODMAPs get even more complex and where these different types of bloats come in. So it is really cool if you can journal and go slow enough, because I think slow and curiosity are like the pre-requirements for this to work. But you can literally go kind of food by food and be like, oh, wow, raspberries, good, blueberries, bad, cauliflower, bad, kale, good, broccoli's bad too. And so then you can start to ask, like, what is the dominant carbohydrate structure inside of these vegetables and these fruits? And that can lead you to some potential analysis about what enzymes you might be lacking, because there's no test out there that can tell us this. But in general, there are a whole bunch of people who can't do like cabbage, broccoli, cauliflower, all the cruciferous vegetables, which we know are like anti-inflammatory. They're like anti-everything. They're really good for us, and we'd love to eat them, but they bloat us, and then we fart, and it usually smells pretty bad. That is typically a alpha galactitase and a cellulase deficiency, which are often at the microbiome level. Your bugs are actually making those. If you react to things like polyphenols, that's typically a xylanase issue. And so you can kind of begin to break this down where if you eat high fructose, high glucose, and you or sucrose type things and you bloat, that's sugar. You might have a SIBO or a candida infection at that point, because there's not a lot of enzymes needed for that. If you can't do starches, that's an enzyme issue usually at the top, at the amylase level. And then the complex vegetable interactions are typically more at the microbiome level.
What, there's a good question here from our anonymous attendee. Well, what about leaky gut when food is not broken down small enough and it does get across the border, the intestinal barrier, because of permeability? So you were talking about how it needs, the molecules of the food need to be small enough to go across the border. But I think the language is a little bit confusing, because it sounded like you were saying we had to have leaky gut, but we don't. It's just about absorption, right? So the nutrients need to be absorbed.
Correct. Yep.
So normal body function.
Normal body function is the food, the nutrients go through your cells. Leaky gut is the food goes between your cells.
Right on. Okay. That was a great explanation. Thank you. Why are seed oils bad for the gut?
I mean, they're just inflammatory in nature by themselves. And depending on what your beliefs are, and I don't think that this is figured out yet, but in general, we do want to balance between omega-3s and omega-6s and omega-9s for generalized health. We do get a decent amount of omega-6 and omega-9 just from living in the Western life, and pouring extra like vegetable oils, rapeseed oil, those types of things into your body is probably not great. I personally have a belief that if you can't do it in your home, if you need like some special chemical process in a giant press to extract oil from something, then, you know, it's probably more risky on the food scale. Like even some of the new crazy cool milks, like oat milks and things like that. You're like, how do you milk an oat? I don't really know. There's
the more we process things
yeah. to have a Western lifestyle, the farther we get away from nature.
Exactly. Guys, please put your questions in the Q&A box, because that's much easier for me and I get overwhelmed. What I also wanted to find out is, what kind of water do you drink, Steve? OJ wants to know, does chlorine in the water affect gut microbiome? What water system for the whole house would you recommend to get rid of the chlorine, fluoride, and basic toxins in US water? And of course, that varies depending on where you live.
Yeah, I mean, right now I'm drinking just natural spring water that we get from the store at the moment. There's definitely the possibility and probably the fact that the chlorine in the water, the chlorine in your pools everywhere is affecting your microbiome. I tend not to choose to optimize my life for this, but if you have the possibility to install a whole house water filter with like a remineralization, I think that's, you know, more power to you. I wish I had that as well. But it's just lower on my list of to-dos, because I want a resilient body. I don't want a fragile body. And by that means I can only have like non-chlorinated water that's, you know, run through the chakras, and I can't leave my house and go to the restaurant. So right. I like to travel. I like to see the world. So I try to minimize my exposure to it, but I don't fret over it.
Right. It's a balance. It's just such a balance. One other thing about seed oils is a lot of times they're rancid by the time we get them. So that's just like a baseline about seed oils, peanut butter. Peanuts are often rancid by the time we get them. But that's all like such doom and gloom, because to Steve's point, like you still want to live, you still want to be able to eat, you still want to be able to, you know, function. There's a lot of controversy about distilled water, you know, versus not. And that's a whole nother webinar, you guys. So I want to just stick to the, great questions. But I wanted to, Lee's asking, you talk quickly through the different enzymes that break down different things. Do you have a resource that could recommend where we can find those lists and the veggies food require which enzyme? So do you have a bottle of Holozyme there?
I do. Yeah.
So also, Steve created this digestive enzyme to actually answer that. And he gave us a nice discount for today if you wanted to buy some, no pressure. But Steve, why did you develop this and how did that happen?
If you click the link to that Siobhan has there on our, okay, on our page there, on our e-commerce store, if you scroll down to almost the bottom, it actually lists out what the foods and the enzymes do.
Cool.
I wanted to do that on the label, but the FDA does not allow it. Just in case anybody doesn't know this, the label on the back of the bottle, that's not for you. that's to protect the supplement company, because this is legal language. That's not health advice. So just a FYI for people who think that the back of the bottle tells them the whole story about how to use the product. I mean, it is generally good recommended advice, but that's legal language. That's not health advice. I created Holozyme because as a person who struggled with food and bloating and had to be on very restrictive diets for a long time, I want to, like I said, I want to travel. I want to eat out. I want to live my life. And I ended up using usually like 2 to 3 Digest Gold and like 3 Dipan 9 at every meal. And if you add up the cost on that, it's like $150 or more a month just in enzymes. And it also didn't work all the time. I was very frustrated, especially like if I wanted to go on a date or I wanted something special to happen and it wouldn't work. Then when I got Kalish trained at the Functional Medicine Institute, and then I saw people, I saw the exact same thing repeated over well over 300 consulting cases. And this just annoys me. As an engineer, I need the highest return for the lowest amount of risk. And in like engineering school, like you can't have like some percentage of bridges fail or tires fly off. And so I don't quite understand why in the medical community, there's not more drive towards products that work in a higher percentage of people. It's like they get half the science right, and then they just kind of like put it to market and they don't really keep going. And so that's kind of what Healthy Gut is standing for. We want to make products that hopefully work for at least 70% of people who purchase them, which is actually, it might sound like crazy, but the truth is that that's a very high number in supplements as well as drugs, actually. Not that it's a drug, but, so I was just on a quest because my life got really stressful. Siobhan mentioned that for a while I got disillusioned with functional medicine and diet and supplements. And I was like, this stuff's all for the birds. It doesn't have the answer for my visceral hypersensitivity. And so I started coaching people, business. And then I came back when I realized that my life was like steering me back towards digestive health and I needed to handle this. And so Holozyme's really for me as well as it is for you. And I basically just called around the world, everybody who makes enzymes, what's the difference? Why is your work? I just decided to make one bottle that was like triple everything on the market. And it was like $40 per bottle. And it's still, the guy was like, I still don't think this is going to work, which is when I found a PhD who had a patent on why enzymes don't work. It's literally called an activation patent for enzymes. And what he found was just a base principle in biology that enzymes made vegetarian or vegan in the lab do not have the mineral they need to turn on work. Instead, it's just a chance dance inside of your gut if it finds the magnesium or the calcium or the zinc that it needs to work. And so anything like the creons, the pancreatins, the extracts from animals have the mineral with them. But all those rush water enzymes I mentioned, all the microbiome enzymes, anything that's not an extract from an animal does not have its mineral cofactor packaged in it. And so this was and is the reason why it's hit or miss. Like one day your product works and the other day it doesn't work. So what he did was in a lab, sit there and drop the minerals in the petri dishes with the enzyme, codify that and make a patent out of it. And he ran 6 studies on it. And so I licensed his patent and we redeveloped his formula to be heavily focused on these digestive issues that cause bloating and cause upset for myself and for a lot of other folks.
So it's very different. This really fills a gap. Michelle is saying, is there an amount of kelp listed in the enzymes? I have to keep my iodine low. I'm a person with Hashimoto's who can only take a little iodine.
Yeah, it's 15 milligrams.
And that's low.
Yeah. And okay. It's standardized to 0.1% iodine.
Okay.
So that's 0.15 milligrams of iodine, or 0.015.
Can we talk about the reliance on enzymes long-term? Carrie's asking about that. Carrie, and everyone, this isn't going to resolve your SIBO. If you have an overgrowth of Klebsiella or E. coli in your small intestine, then that's small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. If you have an overgrowth of archaea in your small intestine, then you have, intestinal methanogen overgrowth. So this is a tool to use in addition, and while you're figuring out your, you know, if you do have those things, some people take digestive enzymes and their bloat just goes away. God bless. Some people really have to do a multi-pronged approach, which is what I see a lot of you talking about with your issues. And also our Facebook group, SIBO SOS community, there's, you know, 22,000 people in there all talking about this. So that's another support. And also if you do decide to go for some whole enzymes, I know Steve has a Facebook group for people there as well. Once you're, you know, a customer, it's great service after the sale too. So meaning that there's support. The thing is that if you, Carrie, if your digestive enzymes are being reduced due to age, that's one thing. That's, you know, that's like going to counteract that, and doing it into perpetuity. Hopefully, you know, you get your enzyme mojo back, but it's not usual when you're getting older. I don't know how old you are. That is very typical with a decline of your body creating its own enzymes in the modern world, Western diet, that kind of thing. Anyway.
And also just to say, like, I am hypersensitive to this question, and I had the same question before I even brought a product to market. So I own books from the 1800s on digestion, and anytime anybody has a theory about how taking extra enzymes might stop the own our own internal production of enzymes, I investigate it. I have not found even a credible theory, let alone a research paper or a book that actually mentions a mechanism on how that would happen. So at this point in time, there's still no theory or even idea on how this would work. And then as Siobhan mentioned, I don't know, like, again, it depends on how old you are. Like if you're in your 20s and 30s, you don't really get this yet. But as you age, you'll be like, oh, my eyesight's going. Oh, my ovaries and my testes are drying up. Oh, things are changing. And the same thing happens with your gut, unfortunately. Like things that we just start shutting things down.
What about people who are sensitive to mold and the enzymes like Aspergillus? Because I know we've had this question before, and
yeah.
I want to have you answer it. Because they're, how does that show up on the bottle? Is Aspergillus,
well, if your bottle does not say pancreatin, then it came from a mold species. That's how it shows up on the bottle.
Okay.
So in other words, almost the entire marketplace is made from, the enzymes are given off by mold, not made from mold. And that's the key understanding here. And so if this was actually a real issue, then you would not be the only one reacting. There'd be millions of people having issues, and there's not. And the reason why is just a little fundamental misunderstanding about how this process works. If you go in the forest, you notice trees are decaying. How those trees are decaying is mold is on it, and then it gives off enzymes that decay the cellulose and the basically the stuff in the tree below it. And then the mold eats the vitamins and nutrients that are released. In the lab, they basically construct certain types of molds that they want for certain enzymes. Like there's different molds that make proteases, and you can do a bunch of different proteases. They basically just feed it the right like pH and the right temperature and with the right food, and the mold secretes enzymes. Then they filter that through like a bunch of filters and a whole crazy process. So the mold stays over in the mold area, but the enzymes end up over in the clean, you know, no bad stuff area. And so hopefully that makes sense. Did that make sense, Siobhan?
Yeah, it's almost like a off-gassing process of the mold. It's a byproduct of the mold. It's not the mold.
But right.
It's a very understandable, like,
totally
question. What do you suggest for people to take their enzymes with or after meals? Tracy's asking.
You can play with it based on our, you know, thousands and thousands of customer interactions and feedback. There are some folks that do benefit from taking it right before the meal, so that basically the enzymes are in your stomach as the food hits your stomach. So if you're someone who's having a ton of bloating and you're really struggling, that might be the best bet for you. For the majority of people, like 70% or more, taking them right after your meal seems to be just fine. It's totally up to you.
What do you think about bone broth for gut health, Sherry?
Yeah, I mean, it's full of minerals and glycine, you know, hopefully some collagen. So all those things are very important building blocks for the integrity of the gut. But if you have an enzyme deficiency or a stomach acid deficiency or a butyrate deficiency or a microbiome problem, bone broth's not going to help with any of those things.
Do you take a probiotic with your enzyme? Birdie is asking.
I do. I take all my pills together all at the same time. I don't buy that you cannot take probiotics with your meals. I think that's a bit of a myth.
Okay. Doreen is asking a question. Thanks for shortening it, Doreen, because I get overwhelmed. Because it's like too long to like read through and then get to the answer. Okay, what if I just can't avoid bloat? They're constantly and just gets worse with any food, only once in a while painful, as I do take enzymes when I eat. Good for you. Any idea what to do next? I don't want to limit diet, been there and developed super sensitivity to so many things. Dorina, have you tested for parasites? We haven't talked about parasites today, Steve. And that also can lead to bloating. Ovarian cancer can lead to bloating. I mean, it's a symptom of something else, right?
We forgot to touch on this. If you have a history of bloating and you've tried enzymes and you've tried many of these specialty diets and this history goes on many, many years, please go medically get your physical body checked out, because there are people who are on these webinars who I will hear from in like a year from now. This literally happens. It happens from some of people from the SIBO SOS group who have even bought Holozymes. And I'm like, okay, double, triple your dose. It doesn't work. And I'm like, go to the doctor. And they have like something called double loop syndrome. They were born with an issue. They're like, oh yeah, I did have surgery when I was a child. And they have like either issues with the healing process, or maybe the surgeon left, honestly, clips in there. Like you said, there could be a tumor growth. Like there are real medical reasons for bloating that have nothing to do with food. And if your history is multi years of this, and you have functional medicine testing saying you don't have SIBO, and you've tried all these diets, please go get endoscopies, colonoscopies, CT scans, because ruling that out could save your life and could take care of your bloating.
Well, there's that too, right? There's a side effect. Yeah. No, I don't mean to make light of that. It's so important. And we don't talk about that much because it's, you know, I think it's a foregone conclusion that, you know, you have SIBO or, you know, IBS, which is SIBO. So I'm glad we're talking about the bigger picture. One thing to also keep in mind is that when you have adhesions, that can pull your intestines. Like with endometriosis, it can pull your intestines in different places in your body and sort of like tug on it. And so the migrating motor complex, which is the sweeping motion of the small intestine, can't work as effectively, which can lead to SIBO, but and on and on. So if you're like, I'm doing everything, do what Steve said and go find somebody, get a CAT scan if you need to, and so on. I don't want to take up any more time. Yeah. Sorry.
One other thing you have to rule out if bloating is an issue for you and you haven't ruled it out is you have to do an HCL challenge. I don't even care if you do it with our HCL guard, do it with somebody's HCL, because if you're holding the food inside your stomach for like extra hours, the fermentation could be happening there, and or you're going to be messing up your enzyme and speed pathways later in the small intestine, which will just almost automatically lead to bloating. So, and we also know that low stomach acid is like a massive risk factor for SIBO and SIBO overgrowth. So if you're trying to structure like, okay, I've been doing the food, I've been doing the enzymes, step two would be like double your enzyme dose. I don't care what the brand is. See what happens for the next 3 days. That doesn't work. And you've already done all these things. Try an HCL challenge.
What is an HCL challenge? Patry wants to know.
An HCL challenge is either you go to the website, you take the SIBO SOS coupon, get some HCL guard. You take one pill with a standard dinner. Usually that'll have some protein, at least 10 grams of animal or vegetable protein, and you just wait and you see what happens. If you do not have any like tingling, burning, heat sensations, then that means that you probably will benefit from some stomach acid replacement support. Steven Sandberg Lewis said in a podcast, which I know you've had on the show, and I love him. I think of him as a mentor of mine. Dr. Jonathan Wright has also published publicly in his books data on this. They said that 70 to 85% of people reporting to their clinics with either heartburn or IBS like symptoms, when they did a stomach acid test, which is like kind of a rare test that you can only do in certain doctor's offices, you have to pay out of pocket, it costs like $500. somewhere between 300 to 500, depending where you live. They said 70 to 85% of those people who had these nondescript bloating, heartburn, IBS would have low stomach acid. So there's a chance, there's 20% chance, you know, that you need to ask us for a refund. If you take that pill and then you feel some heat, some sensation, you drink some baking soda, you try it again the next day, same thing happens. You probably have just fine stomach acid. Like you're probably okay. There's like less than 1% of people have high acid. If you have high acid, of course, that will also cause some upset. But that's extremely rare. So I wouldn't focus on that.
Do you have a supplier of Holozyme in the UK?
Not right now, but we do ship internationally still.
And it's just what Steve said in the past is that the shipping's really high. So, you know, do the evaluation and see if you can pull that off. We know, Steve knows we're trying to take it global. I mean, I'm saying we, but there's so many, I don't have anything to do with it, but he is trying to make it global. But you know, a lot of companies won't even ship overseas, no matter what the postage is. Okay. We have to start wrapping up. Is he saying that enzymes in Holozyme are animal derived, or is he adds minerals that you make it like animal derived enzymes, Elizabeth?
The Holozymes is a vegetarian and vegan safe formula. It is not animal derived. We add the minerals to make it like the animal derived ones.
Okay. Is sauerkraut good or bad for us? It has probiotics in it, but it's high FODMAPs. Does sauerkraut make candida worse?
I think sauerkraut is extremely good for you if you can tolerate it. Anything that you eat, no matter if I say it or Siobhan says it, or anybody else says it, even your doctor tells you that you should eat X, Y, and Z, and you eat it and it causes pain, you're the responsible one. You're in control here. You say, I don't know. I don't like that one. I'm not going to eat that. But in general, there was a study that just came out on taking inulin or eating more fermented foods for, I think, 60 days. And it was like an uncontrolled dietary study. And the people who ate more fermented foods had better quality of life and had a better microbiome diversity than the people who just supplemented with inulin. So there is, you know, a lot of reasons to eat fermented foods on a regular basis if you can tolerate them.
And, you know, Summer Bach, who's a fermentologist who was in my very first SIBO SOS summit, she had people really clear their SIBO first, wait till their gut healed, and then got into very small amounts of fermented food, as in like a half a teaspoon of sauerkraut juice and build up. So I have a girlfriend who has had SIBO and she could eat garlic. Right. So it's everybody is different. Like if I ate some garlic during a SIBO flare, I would just be like, dying. I just want to answer this question, and then because I have another session I have to get to. This one's not a full hour, sorry. But Para Wellness is a this has to do with parasites. Para Wellness is a lab. Is it a lab? It's this hybrid that's in Colorado and is a wonderful place to find out if you have parasites. So just go to their site, check it out. Right. He was a parasitologist for the military. Then what I've also heard, like from our incredible Dr. Ilana Gervich, she really loves GI Map because GI Map shows not only parasites, but also other pathogens that are in your stool. So if you go to LabCorp or you go to Quest Labs, which is in the United States, the like most mainstream labs, and you do an OVA a P&O test? What is it? It's like the eggs of the parasite test. There's initials on it. An O&P test, right? If it is positive, it is positive. If it is negative, it is not necessarily negative because it is not very sensitive. That test is not sensitive. So if you got it, you got it. But if it's a no, and a lot of times insurance will pay for that, please continue to figure it out. The first one was Para Wellness, Para Wellness, P-A-R-A Wellness. The name of the lab in Colorado is Para Wellness. They don't know me. I've been a client of theirs in the past. They found stuff that no one else found, et cetera. Okay. And then what's so cool is, let's say you showed high for Blasto or whatever. You do a treatment. You can send them another sample as a retest, and it's less expensive. So I'm going to keep going here. Steve, I just had a question here about what's the difference between Holozyme and HCL Guard? So
Yeah, so holozymes is for the small intestine mainly, and it's gonna help you with those missing enzymes or the ones that aren't working. And HCL Guard is stomach acid support. So it's got a prokinetic in organic ginger and DGL to help heal your stomach lining, any mucosal issues. And then it has pepsin, intrinsic factor, which is needed for B12, and then HCL in it. So it is it's stomach support and then small intestine support. That's kind of how our lineup is created.
So Susie just asked if I have, if I still have SIBO after 6 months, should I think about doing a parasite test? First of all, this isn't medical advice, okay? This is my experience as a health advocate and just a patient. The thing is that you really want to get that negative SIBO breath test. That's real, get that load down. Come take the SIBO recovery roadmap with us. The course that Dr. Seebecker created with me. Whatever, get that bacterial load down and then you can really work on healing the gut. If you still have symptoms after you've, yep, I don't have SIBO, but I still have symptoms. Is it candida? Is it a parasite? But don't stop retesting for SIBO, guys. Don't quit before that miracle because it could still be positive, but you could still have the bacterial load come down after treatments. Okay, thank you, Steve. Can HCL Guard be open? The answer to that is no, right?
Nope, you can sprinkle holozymes, you can't open HCL.
Okay.
We got to go. I guess we should do another one on this, but look, if you're listening to these webinars and you're trying to figure this out and you're totally confused now, you're like, oh God, this now I got to buy this guy's stuff. And now she's talking about this. I would just stop and take everything out. So some people are bloated because they're taking a probiotic. Some people are bloated because they are eating sauerkraut. So some of the best things you can do is something called a pill stop. And I want to be the company that makes supplements and tells you not to take them. Stop taking all your pills for a week, unless your doctor tells you you can't. Obviously, I'm not a doctor. Do your own thing. Be responsible for yourself. But it's called a pill stop. Stop it for a week and then slowly add them back in. And you might find that probiotic that seemed really good a few months ago is actually really bad for you. That is a very common thing to find out when it comes to bloating. And yes, if your SIBO keeps coming back, it's not the SIBO, it's something else. So check your stomach acid, check the parasites, check your hormones, you know, get the CT scan, make sure you don't have double loop or something else.
And also, right, to Steve's point, you want to find out why the SIBO is there to begin with. So we always talk about finding that underlying cause. Okay, please pop some love into the chat for Steve. Steve and I have a plan to do more of these throughout the year. And one other thing is that it is $15 off for the formulations. It's $15 off, I think. Whatever, it's a savings. Go to the links and it's taken at the end because sometimes we get emails and someone just asks, what's the coupon? Don't worry about that. I know I do a lot of coupons because I'm twisting people's arms all the time to get deals for my community, but it's already built in. Just go down when you're checking out, the discount's taken there. So, all right. Anything else, Steve, that we can think of in just this last minute?
No, thank you so much for having us on. If you guys want more of this, Siobhan's always like, hey, do you want to come and talk? What do you want to talk about? So if you guys as the community want more on bloating, if we didn't go deep enough on certain topics, just make a lot of noise in the Facebook group, in the SIBO SOS Facebook group, or
don't do that.
Okay, don't do that.
Email me at info@SIBOSOS.com.
All right. Email her at info@SIBOSOS.com and say, make Steve talk about this.
Yes, thank you. At SIBOSOS.com. I'm glad you enjoyed it, Rosalind. That's great. I love talking to Steve. I love having you all here. What's today? March 28th. Holy smackers. Holy smackers. On Wednesday, do you know Nadine Artemis, Steve? She has Living Libations. She's my next webinar. We're really loaded up this month. And she is an amazing beauty. She has all of these luxe oils and beauty products, but also holistic dental products. And I was a longtime customer of Herd's before I met her. And she was one of the leading speakers in the Dental Health Connection Summit. And so anyway, see you guys on Wednesday for Nadine. We'll send you an email. Claire says, I always learn from Steve. Me too. Thanks, Doriana. Thanks everybody for coming. And we'll send you out a replay. And we'll also, we're streaming live to the Facebook right now. Okay. Thank you. Talk to you later.
Everyone.
Bye, Steve. Thank you.